Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Yusuf Kwanga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm right, thanks, man. Although my neighbours decided to bang some tunes, so...
Are they good tunes, though? Are they good tunes?
I mean, you know.
They're not good tunes. They're not good tunes.
Not for me, Clive.
Not for me, Clive.
But how about you?
I'm good. Actually, you know, it's funny because I had a neighbour, I think I might have mentioned this a couple of years ago, but they played very loud music a lot of the time, and most of the time they were playing Prince, and I had no complaints. And I said, nothing further, Your Honour.
So that sounds like one of those like hustle tweets. I love my neighbour's music so much, I asked my landlord to up my rent.
Up my rent.
Just so I could pay for the honour of listening to Prince tunes, or the pleasure of listening to Prince tunes all day. That would be sick, man.
It's awesome, I know. Good vibe. And it's funny, never, you know, typical Berlin, never met them. But yeah. It's a massive apartment block. Never met them, but still, good vibes.
We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. You and I were on Wright's House on Tuesday to talk about Arsenal's win at Sheffield United.
Yes.
A slight change in schedule. We were going to do another show on Thursday, but unfortunately we're not going to be able to do it, which means that we're going to do the rest of the Champions League on Wright's House. So Flo, Ian and I will do Wednesday night's Champions League games on Wright's House on Friday. But you still get two stadios this week and two Wright's Houses. So, you know, yeah. Come on, it's like, come on.
Good times.
Any other admin? Is there any admin?
There is not, as far as I know.
No admin. Lovely.
I'm sad that Jason Kelce's retired from the NFL, but that's not
admin.
I'm sorry.
I could not deal with his retirement speech. What a man. I love that guy so much.
The way he handles himself, man. Yeah, big fan.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
All right, let's talk Champions League. Where do you want to begin?
I think with Bayern Lazio. Ooh,
yes.
I just think that's the one, you know?
Do you know what? I'm really glad that it was just quite chill for Bayern.
It wasn't until it was.
In the end, it was chill.
Yeah, in the end, it was in the end it was chill, but...
In the end, it was all about...
In the end, it was all about Musiala, actually. In the end, it was all about Jamal. It really was. Like, the early stages, Lazio really came out, and Carl pointed out in the group, you know, Matteo Guendouzi... But he wants to play football. He is about it. Ciro Immobile, and this is, there was that moment, it was like 30 odd minutes in after some really good Lazio counter-attacking where Immobile, ball gets crossed. I think Dier gets a deflection on top of his head and Immobile has an option to angle the header across Neuer in the opposite corner. At that point, it's 2-0 Lazio. And I know that Bayern created a lot, but I really still feel like a 2-0 lead on aggregate for Lazio at that point would have been very interesting in front of that crowd. They've seen a lot of disappointments this year for Bayern. But Immobile misses it, and I think he knew. And within a few minutes, Bayern had a couple of goals. And I just want to give some, and you know, effectively the game was 3-0 Bayern in the end, and there's more to say about the game. I just want to give a quick compliment to Sasha Pavlovic.
Yes,
who I thought was unbelievable. Because what they were doing was they kind of had this thing, Bayern, where they had Goretzka dropping in to support Dier at centre-back. So they had this back three, which put a lot of pressure on Pavlovic to bring the ball out. A lot of pressure. And these weren't easy passes. In the Lazio press was extremely attentive. And they basically gave one guy the responsibility of coming through that. And he did it time and again as a teenager. I mean, I just can't say enough how impressed I was by that.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Really good. I thought there were a number of quite impressive performances in this Bayern team.
Yeah.
Comes at an interesting time because I think we said after the first leg though we expect them to win the second leg.
Yeah, we
comfortably.
Did. Yeah.
And I think they kind of needed a game like this. I think they needed
no more drama.
Quite a comfortable win in the end in a big game because it feels like the big games have really been a struggle for them this season, apart from the Dortmund game, really.
Yeah.
But But people kind of almost expect that to be a walkover now. Mm. Thomas Muller after the game did a classic Thomas Mullerism where he kind of like looked at the cameras like, you could say we're like, you know, back in the race.
He was excellent, by the way. He was excellent.
Talk about being a dream vulture. He's a goal vulture. He stole. Yes. We didn't really steal, but Matthijs de Ligt. What, should we go through the goals? Because I thought the goals were quite...
They were quite really good. Yeah, really good.
Kane getting the first.
Yes, the first with a really smart finish. The ball took a deflection, just got to him, and then he just nodded it on. Really lovely finish. It was funny because I was looking for Ian straight away, just thinking like he would have loved that actually in terms of anticipating the bounce of that. The next one, the volley from De Ligt, and it's funny because at first it, like, De Ligt scored it directly, this volley, and he doesn't really know how to celebrate because he doesn't get very many. So he kind of did this weird sort of like backing away, like, and it looked pretty cool actually. It was pretty fun, like, you know, centre back who doesn't get many gets a bang, and then it turns out that actually it was deflected in by Muller, and Muller like catching it perfectly. I mean, I think it was a vital touch. It was a really good, really good header. Excellent reaction. Looked, and we'll talk about him in a sec a bit further because he was superb. And there's a very specific thing he does with Bayern attacks that I think I want to talk about in a sec. And the third goal from Kane again, Leroy Sané cutting in. Leroy Sané, who had a vastly better second half than the first. He had a very difficult.
He didn't have a great first half.
He had a difficult first half. He's not scored, I think, 19 or 20 games now. Cut him from the flank. Ripped it towards the corner, parried away, and then came with the short-range finish. Not the tap-in. I say short-range finish because it takes anticipation to do that. Each goal, extremely smart execution. And yeah, good night, Lazio.
I was rewatching some of the highlights this morning, and I think it was on TNT, the highlights, the commentary for Muller's goal, where they was like, oh my God, what a volley from De Ligt. That is unbelievable. Oh no, it's a header from Muller.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Hilarious. You know, can I say as well, on Muller, while I'm here, there's a thing about Sané and Musiala I noticed, I think, yesterday. That so Sané had a real problem with decision-making in the first half. And I was thinking about what it might be. Then I watched what Muller was doing in combination with Sané, and I think I clocked it. So Sané doesn't make great decisions in the flow of the game. That could be a confidence thing. But what's happening is he's taking the first available decision. Mm. And his first available decision isn't his best one. Musiala does something else. Musiala takes the first available decision, but his first decision is pretty much the best one. And you see that from the way he runs counterattacks, right? When he's on the counter, you see him like breaking, and very often he'll make, more often than not, in fact, most of the time, Musiala, while running at high speed, will execute the right pass. This is not a knock on Sané, because what Musiala does is near impossible, right? Leroy Sané is merely a very good winger going through bad form. And the thing that Muller does that's brilliant is Muller, when you combine with him 1-2 touch, he basically like sets up base camp in the final third. You can get the ball into feet and then get it back from him. And by that time, you've had time to assess your choices better and you're making better choices. This is why I think Muller should always play as a 10 there, because you can have Sané coming in off the flank, 1-2, and then Sané can look up and be like, okay, that's what I want to do. And just that split second more time, which is, and it's why Muller, this is not a knock on Sané, it's why Muller has been used by the best coaches in that position all the time. It's because he gives everyone in the attack time to process and be like, these are the best choices. And you saw once they combined in the second half, because in the first half, he wasn't really finding Muller, Sané. He wasn't doing it. But second half, once he starts going through him, everything just like, all the lights come on. I just cannot emphasize enough just how brilliant a football mind this guy is. And I had to write to my mate, Martin. I was like, hey, Martin, it's like this Muller masterclass, like Martin, very dear German friend of mine, just because he gets it and he's always seen it. And I think, you know, we rave about Muller now and again, but I just think there's some things that Tuchel's done this year where he hasn't fully backed himself or backed his process. And I wonder if when he leads the end of the season, and he looks at potential regrets, Muller's use might be one of them.
Dude, this is the thing about Thomas Muller, right? Every coach who comes into Bayern tries to phase out Thomas Muller.
This is it, right?
And they can't do it.
They can't do it. They can't.
No, because they realise that actually he is the perfect... If he's on board with what you're doing tactically,
yeah,
he is the perfect player to have on the pitch. Because he's been there, he, you know, he's one of the elder statesmen of the squad now. He's 34, but also because of his skill set, he can legitimately play until he's 40, I think, because he's never been super athletic.
No.
He's not been, you know, he's not absolutely jacked. Mm. And his position or the kind of style of football that he plays, he's never relied on physicality or pace or anything like that. It's always just about like ghosting in, you know? Mm. And I think that it's really funny because I think, didn't Niko Kovac try and do this? And didn't Nagelsmann try and do it initially as well? You know, there's like a photo album of new Bayern coach comes in and Thomas Müller looking sad on the bench.
Yes.
You know, in like November, October. And then they always go back to him because they realize that actually, this is why I think Bayern is quite a curious club at the moment. And maybe it'll get to a place where it's not like this, but a few people come in and think that they can really like fix it. Based on the personnel that they've had over the last however long, I think it's slightly shifting away from that. And I think it will be ready for a real like tactical innovation in a few years. And they have had little bits here and there. But we talk about this when Hansi Flick came in after Kovac. And it was very much like, put the square pegs back in the square holes.
Yes.
Like, and then once you have that, then build out because... Right. The quality of player that they have there in those positions is actually really, really good. Like compared to the rest of the Bundesliga on the whole, it's really, really good. I think now though, this is back of Flick's time. Now, I think the gap is much smaller.
I agree.
So it's slightly different now, but there is a similar thing still going on with Thomas Müller. And he's kind of such a unicorn in a way, in the sense that he's not a lot. He's like almost like an old school number 10, but not really. And almost like an old school striker, but not really.
Super, yeah, super weird. Yeah, yeah. Actually, there's a little bit of a parallel with Kai Havertz, right? As in a lot of people, they're different players, don't get me wrong, but in the sense that people be like, I don't get it.
But like, this is the thing actually that's interesting about Kai Havertz is that I think Kai Havertz is essentially the Thomas Müller of the modern age.
Yeah.
Because of the physicality boom of the late 2010s, early 2020s.
The thing about the Müller performance as well that's interesting, it could have come from any point in the last 10 years. Like that specific Thomas, and again, to your point about physicality and movement and space in games like this, where Lazio, where the opposition are pressing well, they've come to play football. It's, and you know, the reason why he's a unicorn, the reason why he's special is he has survived in an era where the number 10 has been mostly obsolete. If you look at how many great number 10s have come and gone, you know, or like, or faded out fast, like James Rodriguez, you know, because of, in some cases, defensive responsibilities, or Martin Odegaard, or Halilovic, all these 10s who basically have taken either a while to get their role or had to shift their focus. So obviously, Odegaard's now an 8, as opposed to a 10. Like, Müller's the one who consistently has been, he's a 10 and... He's a 10, you know, by far the best at that.
Do you know what he is? He's drum and bass, right? No matter what musical trends go on, drum and bass never seems to die.
It
never needs to change.
It doesn't
either.
Because
it's really
pure.
Funny. It's like, it's the only, I think it's the only music genre. And this is someone who's speaking, like, I'm not a huge drum and bass fan. Like, I love a lot of like old jungle, but it will never, ever die. It's really funny. Like, it's a common thing that me and friends have talked about. No matter where you are in the world, you can find a drum and bass party and it will be
It will go off.
It will be rammed.
Yeah. And it'd be guaranteed that people are spilling every drink in sight. Yeah. Yeah. Going wild.
You go to any tiny town, big town, any continent, you go to the drum and bass party there and it's fucking rammed.
You know, it's funny you should say this because last night I took a long walk last night and all I was listening to was the new Chasing Status album because I was like, well, the most recent one, because I'm like, only because, you know, partly because a lot of the tunes in it are brilliant, but also because I'm like, hang on a minute. Also the curiosity of, they released a drum and bass album in 2023 and it was big. Yeah. And I was kind of marveling at that. I was marveling. Again, you could not do that with, I don't want to name any other genres. It sounds like I'm knocking those genres.
No. But this is the thing.
Like, you really couldn't. Like, you couldn't.
No. They're very much peaks and troughs in genres and musical trends. That's why they're called musical trends. But it's like, drum and bass is the Thomas Müller of the music genre.
That is an incredible shout. That's one of your best takes. That's one of your
best takes. Thanks very much. So anyway, is there anything else we need to talk about this game?
I think we'll just give a quick nod to Kane, because I think Kane, 2 goals in this, in a bad season for Bayern by their standards. I just think it just bears repeating that he's been wonderful for them. At a time when other players around have been struggling, like I said, the Sané thing, you just can't afford a player of that quality to have that sustained a dip in form when Leverkusen is surging. I really just think that a good season from Sané in terms of goals, and Bayern don't have half these problems. And it's again, it's not a knock on him, it's a confidence thing, and you can't really be harsh on him to that. Yeah, so praise Pavlovic, great. Goretzka, useful.
It's really funny, the Sané thing, because he is the second highest goal scorer for Bayern this season.
Yeah, but we've seen this before with them. We saw it with Lewandowski.
He's also their top assist maker, but still, yeah, he went on, because he went on that, he started the season really well, didn't he? But he's just not scored since, November now or something.
Yeah, going through it.
Shall we switch our attention to Real Sociedad 1, PSG 2?
Yes.
PSG going through 4-1 in aggregate. Oh, man. Do you know what?
Do you know what they got there? If you look at the La Liga table, you look now and see the top four, Real Madrid, Girona, Barcelona, and Atletico Madrid. It is incredible. And this sounds really patronizing now. I've got to stop myself. It was a wonderful achievement for them to get into the Champions League. And here's the thing as well. They weren't beaten by much in this game. They were beaten by, let's be clear, 4 excellent pieces of finishing, 3 of which came from Kylian Mbappe, who was the difference. Mm. And that really is it. Like, that sounds like a harsh thing. On balance, you know, PSG had some, Zaire Emery again was unbelievable, ridiculous, unbelievable player. But in terms of the finishing quality, Kylian Mbappe produced 2 finishes of absolute genius, to the point where I was, like, we know, the thing about Mbappe is you can say so much about this guy, but then there come points where you actually stop. And I saw his first goal. The first goal was mind-blowing because it was like something out of a 7-a-side training session, where the moment Mbappe gets the ball, the keeper is already in mortal danger. But the second goal, I was in genuine shock. I almost like wrote to everyone and was just like, this man is a straight, stone-cold football genius, and I don't know what you do with him at his peak. I don't know how you, you cannot defend that guy at his peak. You just can't.
His first goal looked like,
it was like watching Henri toying with Zanetti on the counter-attack at San Siro.
Putting him on skates.
Yeah, putting him on skates. Getting the angle he wanted, wasn't it? He got the ball out on that inside left flank, didn't he? And then he was looking up and he shifts the ball inside twice, Ryan, because he's just looking for that angle that no one else really goes for.
There's a subgenre of skill that sells a dummy so hard that the camera operator gets sold.
Yes.
The thing that's so clever about this, and I want to talk about it actually, because we watched Thierry Henry's breakdown of his second goal on CBS afterwards. Mm. I think it's interesting to see Thierry Henry doing that.
Mm.
The first goal, I think, is so clever because there are 2 defenders blocking the keeper's view.
Right.
And it's at that precise moment that you strike it into the corner. Because the keeper's just like that fraction of a second that the keeper cannot see the ball, it's already gone. The second one, I think, is, you know, it's a classic kind of open to shoot far post, pull it near post.
Yes.
He's doing this a lot. And this is what Thierry Henry was talking about afterwards, about how it's something that he's worked on a lot in the last couple of years. And he was comparing it to Thierry Henry's, you know, finish in the far corner.
Right.
And I found this kind of interesting because at the same time on TNT, Rio Ferdinand said to Owen Hargreaves, would you take peak Thierry Henry or peak Kylian Mbappe?
Wow.
It's a comparison that has been made before. I think Owen Hargreaves, he said Kylian Mbappe is more like R9, which I find interesting because that actually, the first goal was very R9 against Real Sociedad.
It was. And actually the thing about that comparison as well about Rio Ferdinand, I would say you can't answer that question yet because you haven't seen peak Kylian Mbappe yet.
Well, this is what they started talking about. They started talking
about, like,
that's interesting.
Yeah. We haven't seen Mbappe's peak.
I think Laura Wood said, who do you think will have the better career at the end of their career? Mm. And I think it's so interesting because they are quite similar in terms of skill set, but I think they're similar at their peak. And I don't know I don't know if we've seen Mbappe at his peak yet. Because
I don't think we have, no.
What was so interesting is that Mbappe came through, a Monaco at 17 or whatever, and everyone was like, holy shit, this kid is unbelievable.
Right.
That's a parallel with Thierry when he kind of came through at Monaco very young. But then Thierry Henry made that move to Juve and just dropped off.
Right.
Was kind of picked up for a bargain when he came to Arsenal. Like, his stock wasn't super high.
No.
At all. You know, he had to rebuild that. And I think that's that kind of adversity in a football sense hasn't really been, Kylian Mbappe hasn't been through that yet, which doesn't make it any less valid.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of like Kylian Mbappe is about to make that move, or maybe the PSG move was the equivalent of the Juve move for Kylian Mbappe, but it was him going home. So it's different.
And at least he got to play. And also, Henri is being played as a left wing back in a 3-5-2. You know, that was, so Henri completely got sent out to Pasto. I mean, he still got like 3 in like 15 or 16. He did okay from out there, but still.
Yeah.
I saw him in those games and he just looked, he was far from the action. He was on the edge of things. He was miserable. And he was played for a winger. Like, on, you know, Mbappe has always been a wide forward, but Henri's been a winger for a while. So he took longer to get going because he wasn't given his role that he wanted. Mbappe is interesting. The comparison with R9, I see it and I like it. Only that R9 had much more, he had much more affinity for being central. That's maybe.
See, this is interesting that I think he's actually a bit of a hybrid of the pair.
I think that's right. And that's fair.
And I don't know how much either way. And I think sometimes it goes more Henri bias, more R9 bias. But I do see glimpses of both. And I think this is what makes him so interesting as a player, is that he could legitimately be, at one point, depending on how his career goes, he could be in one of the top five players of all time, right? Which sounds like such a huge shout to make now.
Yes.
But I think that what I mean by that is that you see the potential for that to happen. He's not there yet, in my opinion, and he's not anywhere near that yet, I don't think, because you just cannot give a 20, what, how old is he, 24? You can't give a 24-year-old that kind of status yet. Do you know what I mean?
Unless you're Messi.
Unless you're Leo Messi, yeah. Because it was just
he's the one that enters that, but yeah, everyone else, yeah. I think he's going to go to Real Madrid just in time. Because
he's going to keep him,
he's 26 in December.
Oh, is he? So, is he that old? So is he 25 now?
He's 26 in December, so he needs to move. He needs to move. And I don't just mean like to Real Madrid. He needs to get moving. So here's the thing. I can compare Mbappe at PSG with Ronaldo at PSV. The difference being that he shifted quicker. Ronaldo made that move faster. He made the upgrade quicker. And there's an element, there's a danger of what Mbappe has done is a stagnation. Now, his Champions League performances show that he is absolutely ready. And that's impressive in itself, because some players that play in those leagues, which aren't as competitive as some of the other bigger ones, they do lose an edge. We saw Neymar do it, and Mbappe hasn't. Mm. That's remarkable. That's special. That should be respected. But also now, and I think he's gone a year, I would argue actually maybe should have gone in a year earlier, maybe a couple of years earlier. But still, Real Madrid are going to get the best all-round forward in the world. They're going to get the best all-round forward in the world, and they're going to get him in a team that will absolutely fit his strengths. And there's talk about where he'll fit, but here's the thing. We've seen this with Real Madrid before. They have this amazing ability for a big club to reconfigure around whoever the key player is. They reconfigured around Bellingham. They did it around Zidane. When Zidane arrived at Real Madrid, there was no natural role for him, in quotes. Within 6 months, it was his team, like even quicker, actually. The whole thing had fit around him. I think the same thing will happen with Mbappe. I just think, look, Carlo Ancelotti played Marco van Basten. If there's anyone who knows how to give an elite striker room.
That's such a flex.
You know what I mean? If there's anyone who knows how to give an elite striker
room. Steve Kerr mic'd up thing where he's talking about where he sits,
Yeah, on the couch of those guys. Yeah,
Or was it? No. It's on the bench. It's on the bench during the game, and he just casually tells a story about Jordan.
Oh, I didn't see. I thought about the round table they had.
No, he does this thing. I think it's either to Steph Curry or Kevin Durant, and he just casually tells this story about when they're playing once, and he's talking about Jordan during a Bulls playoff game, and it's just like you can see
that's your frame of reference.
You can just see them being like, "Fuck,"
because they know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so this is probably something that we forget about Ancelotti.
The thing that's good for Mbappe is he's going to go to a club where he'll be simultaneously tested, but also his ego will be cradled a bit within that wider context. And I think I've always said this is the move I wanted for Paul Pogba straight after Juventus. As a Manchester United fan, I love the idea of Pogba going to United, but as a football fan, I just wish Pogba had gone straight to straight to Real Madrid after Juventus. Because he would have been in an ecosystem where he would have been one of a galaxy of stars, and Mbappe's going to get that. And I think it will be so good for his football, because what will make Mbappe top five all time is the club success now. He's already I think he's entered top 10 most gifted forwards nines of all time. He's already in that. I think what he's done in World Cups alone, he's taken it to such a level. There is no other modern forward who could have scared the life out of Argentina like he did. There's just nobody else. This man's been scaring the life out of Argentina for two straight World Cups.
Half his life.
You know, the sign that we always joke about, the devil horns that guy gave Messi.
It's definitely time for a move for him, I think. And also I think it's time for PSG.
That's right.
You look at the rest of this side, and it's actually really...
I love it.
It looks really good.
They're playing really, football. Really they're good. Playing actual football. Yeah. And I think Barcola, Colomwani, love it.
Yeah, and I think for Luis Enrique as well, it turns into a really interesting project, I think, then. Because I'm not saying Mbappe is a problem or anything, but he's such a big ego in that dressing room around a club that has been built on big egos over the last decade or so. It's one of those right for both parties, I think. Then Mbappe leaves, and then you've got this really dynamic young core. If they really go down that path, man, and they've, and Luis Enrique is almost like, there was always one teacher at school, right, where everyone's just like, I don't want to piss this teacher off.
Yeah.
And if you piss the teacher off, actually, instead of it being a cool thing to do, you kind of felt a bit, oh shit, I fucked up.
We had a teacher that would just raise his eyebrows. And it would be Ancelotti. Enough. You devastated. We had a young teacher, young Ancelotti.
Good rap name.
Yeah, that's a great rap name. He would just raise an eyebrow and he would look vaguely disappointed. And I, even now, worst. As I remember, it's the dude, worst. 30 it's years worst. Later, I remember his disappointment. 30 years later.
It's the worst, man. It's the worst. But anyway, yeah, that's the kind of vibe I get from Luis Enrique. I think that there are a lot of really, really good young players in that PSG squad. And there are also a couple of really good heads as well, like older heads as well. So very interested to see how that looks.
Similar to the almost, and this is not a knock on Kane either, Harry Kane, similar to the Harry Kane departure from Spurs, I think, where everyone gets new attacking assignments and roles and responsibilities, and they grow with the responsibility. And also like Luis Enrique is a coach. I'm biased because I love his work. But I'm excited to see what he does with a new phase of young PSG players. I just love what he does. Yeah.
Yeah. So PSG and Bayern through. Do you want to have a shout for Real Sociedad?
Because they've just been
an amazing campaign for them to go through top of the group.
I just love everything about how they conduct themselves. I love the players, the playmakers. I like to see Mikel Merino getting that late goal there just because.
Yeah.
It was good. Somebody who always deserves some shine. Oh, yeah, Thabal. I mean, they've got. If I had to compile a squad of players from around Europe who I just find a joy to watch each week, and when I tune into them, there'll always be something exciting there. I mean, Kubo too.
They finished top of that group with that Inter in it.
They came to Benfica and just handled business.
Went undefeated through the group stages.
Yeah, absolute class.
They were top on goal difference, but still, we've seen what that Inter have been doing in Serie A this season.
To finish top of the group with Inter, with that Inter.
They won on Monday night, by the way.
They did.
2-1 against Genoa. Yeah. They're 15 points clear now on the top of the league, which is...
With a couple of key injuries too.
Yeah.
Calhanoglu
lost one game all season in the league.
To finish top of a Champions League group with that Inter, I mean, come on.
It's Real unbelievable, Sociedad, man.
All the praise.
We talk about Imanol a lot, and a lot of that squad was in the youth team that he coached, and they've come through, and it's... I think it's a really, you know, it's a club that we have a soft spot for, Real Sociedad. Yeah. And I think, you know, both, well, all the Basque sides, to be honest, I think, you know, Athletic Club as well, we have a big soft spot for. And I think there's, with the glitz and glam or the kind of the hype, you know, the showbiz nature of Barcelona and Real Madrid, and even, to be honest, Atleti over the last few years.
Mm.
But to see clubs like Real Sociedad get into the Champions League, finish top of the group, especially after the Copa del Rey thing a couple of years ago as well, we just, I don't know, I just think it's...
There's a few players, there's some managers...
Imanol deserves a hell of a lot of, I know this is a righty houseism, but all the flowers, man.
Well, he does, because there are coaches in La Liga who are just coaching the lights out. And they get overshadowed by some of the clubs with bigger resources. But you know, Imanol and Valverde are just...
Do you know what I would love, right? This is the thing about this. Sorry, Barcelona fans, but I would love... I'm trying to do the maths. Let me see. All right, there's 8 points between Athletic Club and Barcelona. So it gets down to like the last couple of games of the season, the Athletic Club pit Barcelona for a Champions League spot. And Valverde's just like... You know, the shrug emoji.
The shrug.
Listen, disrespect me at your peril. Disrespect.
Look, again, we've said this. I mean, of course he made a couple of mistakes at Barcelona, but also the job.
He doesn't as a manager.
Like, I think the nature of the job he was given, I think people understand the longer he's away, just how tough that job was. Mm. You know, that job has shredded some very, very good managers. Mm. And I think he emerged from it with a measure of credit. Just my view. But yeah. Congratulations to Imanol and Real Sociedad on a great run and on going out without any disgrace, because frankly, those two Mbappe finishes, there's almost no other forward in the world that pulls those off. There's almost no other. You know.
Man City, Copenhagen tonight, and Real Madrid hosting RB Leipzig.
That latter one is spicy.
I think Man City are going to obviously win, I think. I think Real Madrid will win.
Yeah, I think they'll go through again. Yeah, I think that's they'll handle that.
There's a bit of a Stadio game on tonight. Sporting against Atalanta. Europa League round of 16.
The food.
Sporting Atalanta Europa League round of 16 just sounds like
hook that to
bit.
My veins.
It just sounds like a bit, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Someone's just like, everyone's eyes have just rolled so hard they just fell over.
We should actually do like a... Get an AI, I'm not the massive, not the biggest fan of, you know, but an AI to like work out what a Stadio tournament would be.
Stadio GPT.
Stadio GPT.
That's what the fixtures. That's such a Stadio game. Anyway, we got anything else you want to talk about today?
No, I'm good actually. I'm good.
You good?
Yeah, yeah.
Keep it breezy. Keep it short.
Keep breezy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
All right, everyone. Well, we'll leave it there for today and enjoy the rest of Champions League. And I'll be joining Ian and Flo on Writer's House on Friday. So don't forget to check that out. If you want to listen to Moose and I on Writer's House from yesterday, go check that out. Stadio Atlas plays on Spotify. Speaking of which, playing out on a track called My Love Turns to Liquid. Dream to Science.
Delightful.
Anything you would like to add, Moose or Gonga?
Nothing further.
Are you sure?
In the end, it was all about Jamal.
We should have done a load of Stadio bootleg. In the end, it was all about Love t-shirts. Just
float them out. Yeah.
That's a... Do you know what, Misha? We could be onto something there. All right, everyone. Much love. Have a great rest of the week. We'll be back with you on Monday.
See you then.
Doesn't take too much for you to know. to your touch.